Welcome to the podcast series Us and Them, brought to you by Heidelberg University's Graduate School for Humanities and Social Sciences. Tune in for thought-provoking interviews with experts in different fields, from the social sciences to the humanities, from law to economics.
HGGS, Us and Them.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of our podcast, Us and Them. Today, we have a very special guest, Florence Wiederkinne. Welcome, Florence.
Thank you, Lara.
We're so happy to have you back because, first of all, you are also a HGGS member, which is really cool. And you were a presenter at our forum. And you were also so engaged with our discussion group that we had before the forum. You were there so many times. You were always there at our get-togethers afterwards. And it was just such a fun time. So it's really cool to have you back. And today we are going to focus on your research topic. So first of all, let me introduce you, Florence, to our listeners. You are a social worker. And you're also a PhD student in ethnology. So how many years have you actually been working as a social worker?
So actually, yesterday I had my last working day because, as you can see, I'm really pregnant. I just started today my pregnancy holiday. Mm-hmm. And before I was working like for 7 years as a social worker and 5 years for a district social worker.
Okay, cool. And what actually made you interested in this job in the first place? How did this start? And at what point did you say, okay, this is actually what I want to do in the future?
Yeah. So actually, I have not a straight biography when you're looking at my university career. I did my bachelor degree in social work, international social work. Mm-hmm. And then I fulfilled some semesters in ethnology in Heidelberg University to do my master degree in anthropology, mm-hmm. in social anthropology. And I was always interested in social relations.
In your PhD thesis, you also write about social work and also about cultural difference in the child protection service. Can you maybe describe your project a little bit?
Yeah. So basically, I'm interested in different expectations. So which expectations are confronting from families and social workers? And of course, these expectations differ if you have a different cultural background, there different value systems standing behind of this. And this is what I'm really interested in.
Now, in your presentation that you did at the forum, you told us that you focus on a specific district in the city of Mannheim, right?
Yeah.
And actually, during your presentation, I learned that there is a red lights district in Mannheim. Like, I feel really naive, but I did not know this, so maybe I grew up a bit sheltered. So what made you interested in this specific district? Is there a lot of social work going on? So is there just a lot of material you can draw from in this specific district? Or were there other factors that made you choose this specific area?
Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, I have to say, I started the job before I had the idea to do my PhD. Mm-hmm. So the idea of my PhD and the topic raises out of my daily work as a social worker in this district. Mm-hmm. And of course, like in each city, you have like districts which are like more vulnerable and there's more social need than in others. And this district is a particular one because it's like a really, really challenging area with a lot of issues you have to raise, like really a high migration rate. So we are talking about more than 70% of the population of this district has a migration background. So of course, this brings up subjects. And the red light district is situated in this district too. And of course, it has also a really huge impact on the families. Mm-hmm. So I was also working with some families, or especially women, when on the end of the month, the money was running out, mm-hmm. they maybe would do like sometimes prostitution.
Oh my god.
And it's maybe something which is like, it's not, I can't not say it's common, but it can happen. And mm-hmm. like prostitution in Germany is still legal, so it can still be a job also from a mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Now you already mentioned that you worked as a social worker, and then at some point you had the idea for your PhD project, right? And I wanted to ask you, was there a specific moment that made you say, okay, this is so interesting, I need to do research on this? Or was it more of a gradual process that made you interested in writing this thesis?
That's a really good question, because actually I had a kind of experience with one family I mentioned also in the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Sinti family. I was working with them for several years. And for the first time I thought, well, the issue was a little bit like that the children went not to school, that education was not like a thing which would really followed up by the parents. But on the other hand, it was like a really lovely home. So they were really looking on their children. Mm-hmm. And they had good relationships. So it was not like a family you would say, well, they absolutely need a social worker to help them.
Okay.
Oh, there's a child danger, but they didn't have enough access to education, mm-hmm. from my point of view. So, and there, I found out that the theory we learn in social work and all the possibilities I have as a district social worker to support those families was really limited. Mm-hmm. So, because, well, I'm working on the youth welfare office, so the extreme is to put our children into state care.
Mm-hmm.
And you will not put children out into state care because they are not going to school.
Yeah.
If this is the only point, that's not what will happen.
I see.
So I was thinking, what is happening? All these years I was talking to the families, to the children, to the parents, and I was so interested in their expectations and their perspective on our system.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one moment the mother was looking at me and saying, yeah, Miss Wiedek, you know, I do not understand why you're always coming and talking to me about this subject. My children are well-dressed, my fridge is full, I'm cooking every evening, every child has his own room, they're playing together, they're happy.
Mm.
So why are you here? And I had, of course, to fulfill also the job from a state perspective to say, well, in Germany, children have to attend school.
Of course.
There's no choice. You have to do this, and if you don't do so, you get punished.
Mm.
And it was really hard to go through this, mm-hmm. because there were really two different perspectives, and I could see that there was something happening between us.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an understanding on the one hand from my side for this family. And on the other hand, she understood why I was also coming, because it was my job.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, what do I have from a theoretical point of view to explain this process, what is happening between these two perspectives? And then I started to read. And actually, this was the first starting point out of my research topic.
I see. Is there actually a lot of material you can draw from? Like, is there a lot of academic research about social work yet? Or would you say the field that you're focusing on specifically is relatively unexplored?
The way I do my research and the methods, I could not find yet a project that was really similar.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there are a lot of researchers focusing on social work. Mostly, they are quantitative research.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, my research method is like really, it's an ethnography. So I'm focusing on qualitative research methods. I'm using a triangulation of participant observation, qualitative interviews, and group discussions. So I think this makes my research really unique at the moment.
Which is great. So are you actually focusing on a specific number of families that you've been working with?
Focusing especially on two streets in this district.
Mm, okay.
Which are quite long streets, but, well, it's a qualitative research. So it's not possible to talk to hundreds of families. And on the moment, I have finished the first part of my research, and this is more the perspective of the district social workers. And the second part is like more with the families and with the young adults. Mm-hmm. So because I will not do interviews with minors, because I think from an ethical point of view, it would be very questionable.
Okay.
And I started with this, so I started already with interviews with families, but I have still to fulfill the second part of my research.
Mm-hmm. And you always have to be transparent with the people, I assume. Like, you always have to tell them, okay, I'm doing my PhD on this topic, and this is why I'm doing this interview with you now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, I have also to deal always with my double role. So mm-hmm. I'm a social worker and a researcher. So I have to be really, really attentive how I document my data when I'm doing this. In the past, I had a really special weeks where I was just a researcher, so I took like holidays or work off just to focus on my research. And I'm not mixing up it in the same time that I'm doing my daily work and I'm also researching. So sometimes in the evening when I think about something, I will note something, of course, in my field diary, but basically most data are collected while a specific time, mm-hmm. which is really defined as research time
or field work. Has it ever been difficult for you to juggle with these two different roles you have? Like, have there been moments where you've been struggling with this double role in a way?
Not really, but I had an experience with colleagues, because, of course, I'm also observing my colleagues as a researcher. And the first days, they were like looking on me and saying, what are you doing here? Why are you standing in my door? So they were like a little bit, well, we have to wait what she's doing there.
I see.
But after a week, they get used to it.
Mm.
And I see it more than as a benefit, because the people know me. So I think it's an area which is really, really also trust-based, because if you hear about child protection or about district social workers or Jugendamt, mostly in the media, it's like really negative. So you have just a negative example when somebody did not a good job, or if a child dies, or if something really bad happened. And of course, it's like easier to talk about these kind of topics if you have a trust-based relationship to a person.
Sure.
So on this hand, I see my double position as a benefit from my research, because my colleagues know that I would not do something just to make them feeling bad. My basic interest is to show the situation as it is,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not valuing it from a special perspective.
Mm. And I assume your research is also anonymized. Like, when you actually publish your thesis, yeah. nobody will know who said some of the things yeah. you're quoting.
So this is a really important thing you're mentioning, because I'm synthesizing the data. So that means that even if somebody is telling me, I'm not only changing the name, I'm really changing a little bit the history, so the stories, the age, the sex. Yeah.
Okay. Do you think your colleagues forget about you being there at a certain point? Because something that I just thought of is actually a reality TV, because people in shows like, for example, Big Brother or something, they always say, oh, at a certain point, you just forget about the cameras, and then you behave in a way that is just natural and like you would do without cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say it's the same way for your colleagues? Like, do they just forget somebody else is there and watching them at a certain point?
After a while, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened also that I was just sitting in a room and listening to the discussion from my colleague and the family. And at a certain point, my colleague was turning around to me and say, well, what do you think, Ms. Wiedekinder? And then I was looking on her and I saw that she forgot on this moment that I was not sitting there as a colleague, then as a researcher.
Ah, I see.
So I was looking on her and I say, well, today I will not say my opinion. And she was laughing and yeah. And of course, in the beginning, I explained it also to the family. So it was never sitting in a room or observing somebody who was not conscious about it, that I'm doing research.
Mm-hmm. In your presentation, you mentioned that culturally and institutionally shaped expectations intensify tensions between the social worker and the families. You already mentioned the school example of this family not sending their kids to school any longer. Could you think of maybe one or two other examples of these culturally and institutionally shaped expectations?
Well, I think nobody is free of ideas or assumptions in front of other cultures. So I think most of us are willing to be really open-minded and to accept as much as we can. But in the daily work, I think it's always a challenging when you have to fulfill like what I was explaining as Wächteramt, so what you have to fulfill by law, by the municipality to protection of the child. And on the other hand, you have like also culturally based ideas or traditions or things you can't accept in Germany because it's going against the law.
Yeah.
So as an anthropologist, maybe you would accept it if you would do the research in their home countries, but as a district social worker, I can't accept it here in Germany while working like as a district social worker with like a social mandate.
Yeah, of course.
So, of course, there are things, for example, like really common thing is like girls looking up for the younger brother. So like 10-year girls alone at home with the younger brother looking up. If by the parents are working or doing shopping or something.
I see.
So this is maybe, and some cultural backgrounds, it's fine, but in Germany it's not allowed.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah. Coming back to the school example, because I remember that in your presentation, you also said that the background of that family not sending their daughter to school anymore was also that they said, in our culture, it's normal that girls marry at that age, right? And so she no longer has to go to school because she will marry soon anyway. And then she will just be a stay-at-home wife, mom, apparently, at some point. And I was just wondering, like, how do you deal with situations like that? Because you mentioned before that this would not be a reason to take that girl out of the family, right? But like, would they have to pay a fine? Or, like, what are the consequences? And how do you make sure that there are consequences? Is it even... Is it always possible? I assume it's not always possible, right?
So, I think in the real life, less consequences are possible because, well, you don't have the power to change the will or the idea or the value standing behind of this. And, well, Laura, I think, I guess, some years ago you were also 16.
Yeah.
So if you're talking to a 16-year-old girl and you say, well, you can't do this, and it's hard, and you can't force a 16-year-old girl to leave your home if you're fine with this.
Sure.
Against the will.
Mm.
So... of course, you have different kind of power if the child's smaller or older. And you have also to perceive this in your decision.
So, because you've got to go to school for 9 years, I think, in Germany, right? That's like the obligatory time you have to go to school.
Actually, you have the obligatory until 18.
Okay.
You have to be in the education system in Germany until 18.
Mm-hmm.
And then normally you get punished, but then you get the fine from the schools. And if the schools are not doing this... from some reasons, I don't know. This is, of course, an issue because, well, I can come and say, well, you have to do this and it will be good for you. But I think here we are entering in the field of social work. So it's not the idea to force the person to do what I think is the best to do. It's to empower the people to understand that education is something, or we perceive in our culture as something really crucial to have a good job, to earn money. And this is an idea of us, how we see us like to emancipate a woman. And yeah, so that's a big issue. And personally, it's really hard for me. So, but that's not the question when I'm working there.
I see. Yeah, and you already mentioned that you already talked to the kid as well, right? And I was wondering, do you, like when something like that happens, or maybe another example, not just like the parents no longer sending their kids to school, but maybe other things as well, do you always talk to the kids as well and ask them, what do you actually want? And then I also wondered, can a kid even be objective at all, or will they just repeat the thing that they've heard their whole life? Like if the parents raise their kid in a way that's like, okay, once you're that age, you're gonna marry, will the kid automatically say, okay, this is what I want, because they just don't know anything else? Mm-hmm. What is your experience from that?
I have always to talk to the minors,
yeah.
So I would really critical look on the situation if a district social would not do this and just talk to the adults. Well, it's called Jugendamt.
Mm.
It's not called Elternamt.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah. And, well, of course, we reproduce the systems we learned. So I think that's the biggest challenge to interact differently than our parents. So also the theory says if, for example, you come out of a family which is really, well, where, for example, the classic thing is where a father was beating the mother. So it's not unusual that the daughter will also find a partner who is also beating her.
Mm.
So this is basically like the theory. It's not always like this, but the repeating thing is...
Does it have something to do with intergenerational trauma?
I don't know. Maybe. Mm. It could be, but I'm not so into it. And it can be, but I think the role is also from a social worker to talk to the children that they know that there's another possibility. So it's basically the job to show up all the possibility they have and to talk with them also what is happening if they are taking some choices.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can't say or you can't give the full power to an 8-year and say, oh, do you like to do your homework today?
Yeah, of course.
Do you like to go to school or not? Oh, you don't know? Oh, okay. So don't go. So this is something I think everybody will understand that it's too young. But on some point, minors are more adult than they should be, also because of experience. And then it's really hard. You can't say, well, you are doing the household, you're taking care of your minor siblings, but on the other hand, you're not able to decide if you'd like to attend school or not.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come out of a family who is facing really, really a lot of different social challenges, this is also not the biggest issue. So the first issue may be, is my mother surviving this day? Or did she mm-hmm. take too much drugs? Or do I have enough money to buy food? And if these issues are like in your real life, of course, education is important, but it's not the first topic.
Of course. Now, after your presentation, I really wondered, is it possible to really overcome the expectations we have from one another? Because I feel like there is also a big like philosophical dimension to it. Because I just wondered, like, how far can we actually go? Because, of course, you want to respect people, you want to respect their cultural background and everything, and you want to make them feel seen and heard. But as you already mentioned multiple times, of course, there is also a legal basis that you have to obey, also because this is your job. And so I just wondered, is it possible to overcome every single expectation? How do you overcome expectations you might have? And do you just learn that over the years in your job?
Wow. Maybe this is a question I could answer in the end of my PhD. I can't answer it yet. It is too early. But I think to know that there are different expectations and to have already the idea, may I'm able to overcome my own expectation,
mm-hmm.
can be changed something in the relationship with the persons.
Mm-hmm.
I made the experience personally with one family. It was a really, really hard case. It was a mother. She was really drug addicted. So we had to take out all four children
mm-hmm.
from the family. And there were a lot of other points. So she had like health issues. And also the flat was really in a bad condition.
Mm-hmm.
And the children were not going to kindergarten and school and everything. So there were many, many subjects. They had a really bad tooth and a really bad health and everything. They had no friend. There were no social relations. So Yeah. And I had some colleagues which were like really, like, I think around 10 or 15 years already in the job. They were like telling me, well, it would be really hard, she would never get out of this, or when it's not really possible and everything. And I think that's also a case I really like, because like 2 weeks ago I had the last appointment with her.
Oh, wow.
And actually today we are planning regularly that the children are going for weekends to her home.
Oh, that is great.
And she is still smoking some joints in the evening, mm-hmm. and I can see it on the test, so we are not completely free of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not taking any other drugs anymore. And she has really a structured household. It's clean. And this is something incredible. And she did, like, really courses how to interact with my children, how to do rules in their everyday life and everything.
Mm.
So this is, I think, the best example I had in my career, why social work can change so many things in life.
Mm-hmm.
And she was also a case because when you take out the children of a family, of course the persons will hate you.
Mm.
In the first moment, mostly it's my fault, I did something wrong, or the evil you and I'm taking out the children.
Mm.
And I can understand this perspective. And also this takes a lot of, I think, reflection also on the expectation of your opposite, to understand that it's not personally, that it's... yeah, that happens because you have the power to put the children out. And 2 weeks ago, she was saying thank you to me that I took her children out.
Really?
Because she said she had never had the possibility to come down, to go away from drugs, from prostitution, from everything.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a process, and she took like around 3 years to go there.
This is actually so impressive, and I really admire you for doing this super important job, because I don't think I would be able to have this responsibility and actually take children out of the families and make these really, really important decisions that affect so many lives at the same time. And at the same time, I'm thinking, stories like this, are they what keeps you doing this work? Because I imagine that sometimes it must be really frustrating for you also to experience all of these things, but then at the same time you're also helping so, so many people. And is that what motivates you to keep going and keep doing this important job?
Of course, this case is really motivating.
Because I see.
It's like a success, a really, really huge success. I just love my job.
Mm.
I just really, really love this job with this different humans. And what I really like is to have the possibility to see different worlds of living conditions,
mm-hmm.
and also to get to know different humans with different histories, different biographies.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly these are people which are like really hard living conditions for years. So, I'm really thankful for this job, and I'm really thankful for the people working with me.
Mm. Wonderful. I think the example you just mentioned of that specific family, was that also the example that you wrote the text in our fanzine about?
Yeah.
Because I've got to explain this to our listeners. Florence is also a really good writer, and she made a submission to our fanzine that we had at our conference. And you wrote this story of how you went to this woman's home, and it mentioned that her four children had been taken away from her and that she was an addict. And so, yeah, I just put the puzzle pieces together in my head for a moment. And this was so well written. Like, I literally got goosebumps when I read this.
Thank you. That's really nice of you, Laura.
So I was wondering, so first of all, as a social worker, how do you stay professional in these situations while also showing empathy? And then as a researcher, would you say you're able to objectively analyze these situations, or does a bit of subjectivity, because, I mean, we're all human, also play a role for your research?
So I think in my own cases, it would be really hard to have like really a proper objectivity from a research perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, I'm mostly looking on cases of colleagues. So it's not my own cases. I was like breastfeeding for years.
Mm-hmm.
I think this would be really, really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I used it for the fanzine because I think that's other form. So maybe yeah. It's not the goal to be the most objective person. It's a case I'm really, really, I learned a lot as a social worker, but I think I can't use it really a lot in my research. I wrote it also in the fanzine, so I was also doing things which were not my job. So I was sitting with the mother on the table. I helped her to fulfill like the papers for the job center and everything. This is actually not my job.
Yeah.
So, and I did this because I had a huge empathy for this woman. I saw a woman fighting alone with four children, and of course, as an emancipated woman, I was thinking, we have to support each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there was also moments my boss was saying, Florence, you're doing too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're not paid for this.
Mm. And you also need to distance yourself a tiny little bit because this is your job and this is not your private life, right?
It is. And I'm a human.
Yeah.
So I will never say I'm professional 100% every day from 9 to 5.
Of course.
That's not possible. And I think that's also okay because I'm working with humans. So and I think there must be also room in social work to maybe be more human than the fulfiller of law.
Yeah, I see. I imagine it a bit as a strange feeling when you stop working with a specific family, right? Because on the one hand, I assume you're probably really happy that you helped these people to improve their lives. But on the other hand, you've also built relationships with these people, with these families. So does it also make you a bit sad when you know you will not see these people again, probably?
So basically, it's my goal. My goal is that these people don't need me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have fulfilled this, so I did a great job. And I think it would be harder to leave the job and to think, well, there are some points I had to mention or we had to talk about or whatever. This family, it was not so hard for me to leave them because I think they don't need my support anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can handle it alone. And I think she's strong enough and she has her relationship. She has, like, people helping her in the everyday life. She knows where to go. And I think it's also really, really important to not think, as a social worker, I'm so important in the life of others. So I'm not God.
Mm.
And I don't like to have this position or this really, really important role in the life of these persons for years.
Okay.
So it's a period, it's some years, and then I think there you're entering the professional line, you have also to do a cut at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Florence, this is such a fascinating topic, and I'm really looking forward to learning more about your PhD project in the next couple of years. I wanted to ask you, so I don't know if you already know about this, if you can already say this, but do you want to stay in academia after your PhD? Would you like that? And are there maybe other fields that you might be interested in the future?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think I will leave academia. I'd really love to do research, so it's really a hard project for me. It's less an idea to do the big career as a professor, or I don't know, I don't think they would do this. I can imagine to do maybe some teaching or something, but I'd really, really love to work with people together.
I see.
So this is my aim, and we all know academia is not easy. places are limited. And I don't see myself in academia.
Okay. But I mean, I can tell from the way you talk about your work how passionate you are about it. So that's also a great decision, in my opinion.
Mm.
Yeah. Thank you so, so much for being our guest today. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners also learned a lot. And we're looking forward to hearing more about your project in the future, hopefully. We'll definitely stay in touch. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Laura.
And also thanks to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And we hope that you will also listen to the next couple of episodes we're going to produce for this podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a good day and see you soon. Thank you for listening to the HGGS podcast series, Us and Them. In this series, we bring you conversations with experts from a wide range of disciplines, from the social sciences to the humanities, from law to economics. If you enjoyed our podcast, we invite you to explore our previous episodes and subscribe to our channel so you never miss a new episode. Stay tuned for more insightful interviews coming soon.